Great. Thank you. Thanks, Sherry, so much for opening us up in prayer. And welcome to all the people that are new here, or people who have just decided to introduce themselves. And if you are new and you haven't introduced yourself, you're welcome here too. So my name is Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And the topic that I'm going to discuss tonight, I did this recently on Sunday, the same topic for Sweden. I was asked to speak about being abstinent throughout the holidays. And when I was first asked, well, first of all, I always say yes, just about always say yes, unless I have some other issue, because by the way, that is how I stay abstinent through the holidays, is that giving service on any level, whatever level you're able to give at any point, is what gives us immunity. And so my sponsor taught me, and I believe in it, that I have a debt to repay. And that so long as I happily repay that debt, I can, I can mine this thing, I can keep getting, reap its benefits for a lifetime, so long as whatever I get, I give it away. And so I said, yes, of course, right? And then when I looked at the topic, being abstinent throughout the holidays, I kind of laughed at first to myself. And I thought, well, it's the same as just being abstinent, right? But then I had to really remember, and I dialed it back for a second, and I tried to recall what it was like for myself, maybe earlier in my program, when holidays and occasions were frightening, and if you're new to recovery or if your abstinence is a new gift that you've been given, it might be frightening for you to think, how am I going to make it through the holidays? Because truthfully, my whole life before this was periods of dieting leading up to occasions where I would then just eat. And holidays were a perfect opportunity for me to eat. Right. But then when I really thought about it, I actually didn't really go all that crazy on the holiday. I would start little bites and nibbles, but most of my really crazed eating, my binges, happened in private. They happened alone, in the dark. They actually would happen after the holiday gathering was over, right? When I would go back home. Or when other people would leave and I was left with the leftovers. But there were things that I did during those holiday gatherings that started, right? That opened it up, that started it for me. And that's what it means to be a compulsive overeater, because I cannot stop once I start. And so if I start in those very casual ways, that I created a situation where I would have no choice but to eat more when I came home. And I didn't understand that, because I would come home from these family occasions stuffed, or a family would leave and I would be full. And yet I kept on eating, because there's nothing logical, right? There's no logic that I can use. This is not a logical solution either. That's the truth. It's not a logical problem. And the solution doesn't sound so logical either. But we do have some very concrete ways that we can remain abstinent throughout the holiday season. So I always like to show my photos, and I think I'm going to show them because in a lot of these pictures that I'm going to share with you, there was holidays happening there. There was occasions occurring. I'm just going to slide this over a little bit so I can. Oh, let's see. I don't know why it's not. Hold on a second. The first pictures here, I was not a holiday occasion, but it was a happy time. It was when I had just given birth to my daughter. Really super happy, just like on a holiday. Really super happy, and I thought for sure happiness would keep me from eating compulsively. And then the picture next to it, my daughter got older. I thought I would lose the pregnancy weight, but I didn't. I got bigger, right? And then this is us actually at a happy family occasion. We were out to dinner. I'm certain that I ate compulsively there, or at least began. And I laugh because there's these little boxes of leftovers. I am certain that they didn't make it through the night. I could see them on the table. I'm pretty certain that they didn't make it through the night. And it wouldn't have mattered if they belonged to me or not. They probably were my daughter's, to be honest, and I probably ate them. This is us again going out to dinners. Did a lot of socializing around a table, right? And actually not really socializing. Sort of looking like I was socializing, but I was hiding out. There was a glass wall between me and even my husband and even anybody. Because when food was calling my attention, the people I was with got less of my attention. And so, when how do I remain abstinent through the holidays? Well, it can't be about withdrawing with the people right next to me at the table. I actually have to engage with them. This two pictures, the one of me in the red, I was having a party in my house. It was another happy occasion. But I didn't look like I was having a party. I was a mess. Everything was a mess. And I was miserable, right? And then the picture next to it, we were away on a vacation, something that people do throughout the holiday seasons also. And I was happy in this picture. I was about a couple of days, maybe a day or two away from picking something up. And I wasn't happy the rest of the vacation, not the same way. And then these are just some side by sides. This was picture my husband, this was on New Year's. And it was just a devastating time for me. I could barely hold I was over 300 pounds, and I could barely hold my son. He was very active, and I couldn't hold him because the size of my body, and I couldn't keep up with him. And then there's a picture side by side of, what it looks like to have experienced a miracle, which is why I like to show these pictures, because they are a visual representation of what it looks like to have an experience with the miraculous, which is the only thing that can save me. By the way, only an act of providence, only the miraculous power of God can keep me abstinent through the holidays also. Like, I can give you a lot of tips. I can talk about some of the strategies and the skills and, the things to keep present in your mind. But the truth of the matter is, it's only a relationship with my creator. It's only an act of providence that's going to keep me. And so I like to show the pictures because they sort of give a picture of what it looks like to have a miracle. This is another happy family occasion. I think I ate. In fact, I do remember that I ate in the bathroom at this happy time. That there was food in my pocket, and I was so full of shame about how much I was eating. And I also showed up at these family occasions with a wall between me and the people I loved because I was so full of resentment. So if you want to know how to not be abstinent through the holidays, show up mad at your family and hang on to it for dear life, right? Just keep hanging on to those reasons you're mad at them and don't let them go. And then you will certainly not remain abstinent. And that's my experience, right? In order for me to remain abstinent throughout the holiday seasons, I must be full of love for the people I'm with. And if I can't find that spot of love, I'll pray for all the people I'm with until I can. These are other just happier pictures. Both of them I'm recovered. One I just didn't physically look at yet, but I actually was present and the resentments were gone and the food, I couldn't care less about it at this happy day. I couldn't care less. I always tell that there was a room for dessert at this party that I was paying for and I couldn't care less about it, right? And this is me. This is what I look like for the last number of years. Normal size body. And I can wear any one of those dresses, repeatedly wear them. These are happy family occasions. One I was recovered, one I was not. And that's what I'm going to share with the pictures. So I think it's important, I want to talk about being abstinent throughout the holidays. First of all, we got to talk about what does it mean? What does that even mean to be abstinent, right? What does that mean? So we can define it in the doctor's opinion. It says on XXIV, that we believe and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So I'm not an average temperate eater, which means that unlike the other people I'm with, temperate, if you think about temperate, sometimes there's a fluctuation of a lot followed by a little less, almost like temperate weather. Most of the time it's pretty mild, but there's an occasional dip and an occasional decline and up and down. And that's what normal people do. Normal people, they're temperate eaters and they can overeat a little bit on the holiday, but I'm not them. I'm not like that. I can't overeat on a holiday because what happens is that I can't do this safely because I can't stop once I start, right? So I have to be entirely abstinent. And there's different definitions. Some people talk about alcoholic foods and alcoholic food behaviors, and those are some separate issues. I know for me, if I can't have it on Monday morning and Monday afternoon, and I can't do it on Tuesday night, I can't do it on Christmas either. And that's just the truth for me. It's pretty, I'm not temperate. I'm not an average temperate person. So the other definition of what abstinence is it's action of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. So, some people, sometimes you hear things like, well, I overate, but it wasn't my alcoholic foods. Okay, that's not abstinent. That's not abstinent. So I can't overeat because overeating also does the same thing to me. Once I overeat, I can't not overeat. I still want to keep overeating. So my problems, but here's my problem, right? I know all this, and lack of knowledge is not my dilemma. It's lack of power. So I can know 100% what I'm unable to eat. I know that, right? I can know that. And even by the way, I've known that most of my life. I've had an understanding of what I can't eat. And I can also understand what the right portion size is. I have a lot of education. Those of you who like, I did Weight Watchers for years and years way back in the day. I know, what do they say? Like a deck of cards. Is like a piece, I mean, that's what they used to tell you, like a deck of cards is a normal piece of meat or whatever, right? I know that. Lack of knowledge is not my dilemma. It's lack of power. Because I can know 100% what I'm supposed to do, but I still lack the capacity to act in ways in which are in agreement with this information. That's what it means to be powerless, right? That's to have not enough power. So I know that the only thing that can keep me abstinent is a relationship with God, right? Which I find through working the steps. In the XXII, it says, though we work out our solution on the spiritual as well as an altruistic plane, which is the steps, we favor hospitalization for the alcoholic who's very jittery or befogged. So I usually discuss with people anytime I talk about abstinence, what the hospitalization period is. What does that mean, that concept? And I'd say, it's important to know where someone is in order to suggest how to remain abstinent throughout the holidays. Because, if you're in the hospitalization period, it might be very different because you're not on solid spiritual ground yet. So you have to sort of think about yourself as if you're in like early rehab treatment, chemotherapy, right? When I say like hospitalization period, it means I have a lot of really tight parameters between me and the food, between the things I can do and the things I can't do. During the hospitalization period, I say to people, don't go out to restaurants. It's not a good idea. Or if you're going to go, eat before you go, right? This is not a forever. I want to tell you, that is not a forever sentence. But if you are on solid, shaky ground, going to a restaurant is just not smart. It wasn't smart for me. It was just too easy to eat in ways that were not good for me, right? On XXVI, it says all these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been, by any treatment with which we are familiar, permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. So, I love to discuss this idea about being a distinct entity, different and distinct. And what I usually say to people is, I take a piece of paper and I fold it in half because I need to know which side of the page I'm on. And on one side of the page are people, I'll just say, I'm on one side of the page. I generally have to weigh and measure my food. I need to have a plan of eating. I need to commit it to another adult on a daily basis and eat what I say I'm going to eat. And if I change it, I've got to have a dialogue with that person. That's for me. I'm a woman. I can't stay mad at my boss. I can't be mad at my sister. I can't show up to events with resentments from 3 years ago, 10 years ago, or yesterday. Right? I have to like show up places full of love. I have a code that I have to live by. It's love and tolerance, right? I have a daily discipline. I have to start my morning in prayer and meditation. For me, I have to participate in a certain number of meetings. I have to make a certain number of phone calls. I have a lot of ways that I need to live so that I can live happy, safe, and free, right? I'm on that side of the page. Then there's the rest of the world, and you might be hanging out with them on the holidays, and they don't have to. They can do things very different from me, right? Now, why do I mention this? Well, when I'm together with people on the holidays, I'm going to be with a lot of people who don't live on that side of the page with me. And my biggest problem that I can run into is when I think I belong on the other side of the page and I put my foot there for a minute. And that can hurt me. That can lead me astray. But here's the good news, right? And here's the way that I can have immunity. I have a whole community of people who live on that side of the page with me. And so if I want to stay abstinent throughout the holidays, I have a primary purpose. It's to help the people on this side of the page with me, right? And there's enough of us, so I never have to feel alone about it. I have an important responsibility to them and to myself. I have to respect who I am and what I am, and I have to have a respect for what my recovery requires. I still have to remain entirely willing to do all the things that my recovery expects from me, right? And I was taught, now this is like a real like sort of a this is not in the big book. This was like one of those catchphrases that sponsors have said to me years ago, but I think we can discuss it here. My disease requires four P's: plan, protect, I'm sorry, plan, prepare, protect, and pray, right? Those are four things that I would suggest we can do to help us remain abstinent through the holidays. So plan. Know what you're going to be eating, right? I have a plan and I commit it to my sponsor. And I would suggest, especially for the holidays, have a plan. Commit it to your sponsor, commit it to someone. I'm honest with others, right? I can request what I need. So if I'm going to go to someone's home or my family is cooking something, I can make a request for what I need, but ultimately it's up to me to provide it. I'm not going to rely on other people, especially people who don't live on that side of the page with me. It's not their responsibility. But I can request it. You know, I can say, oh, what are you making? And how do you prepare that? I can ask questions. I prepare. So I might need to bring something with me. I do. In the event that what the hostess told me was going to be available isn't, I have a backup plan. I do. I don't generally walk into places and just wing it. I don't wing it. I have a little lunchbox. I packed my lunchbox. I packed my lunchbox when I go to OA retreats, right? It's no one's responsibility. I pack my little lunchbox when I go to my friends. By the way, I pack my lunchbox when I go to get my hair colored because, in the event that she's really backed up and it's so late, I'm starving for lunch, I'm going to my car and I'm eating my lunch because I respect what I have and what my needs are, right? And I plan and protect. Okay, I prepare. I might need to bring something, right? Like I said, if you might need to pack your scale. You know, I don't, you know, different people have different ways in which they need to remain abstinent, right? If you're on a weighed and measured food plan and having a scale is a part of how you define your abstinence, yeah, you might need to bring your scale. Now, not everybody does. So, but I'm just sort of putting it out there in terms of willing, right? What are you willing to do? Protect. Okay, let's talk about what it means to protect. When people offer you something that you don't eat, right? People say, what do I say? What do I say when they offer me this? They're offering it to me. Well, I'll tell you what I don't say. I don't say, and I wouldn't suggest saying this, oh, no, thank you. I'm trying to be good. Do not say, I'm trying to be good. First of all, this is not a morality issue. It's not like, this is bad versus good. And I don't spend too much time explaining and debating with people because then I'm not protecting what I have, right? But what do I say? Oh, that's so sweet of you. No, thank you. You'd be surprised how quickly that ends it. Someone offers you something and you say, oh, no, thanks. Like there's no more debate and discussion about it. And if they're pressing me further, what I generally do is I bring up a subject that they would much rather discuss than what I'm eating. Like, and I say this all the time, oh, show me a picture of that beautiful grandbaby of yours. He must be getting so big, right? You want to have people stop talking about what you're eating? Ask them about their grandchildren. Works like a charm. Ask someone about their new car. Ask someone about their job, right? Ask them about themselves. Get their eyes off my plate and let me talk about them, right? Other-centered is always our solution. And I pray, right? That's the other P. I pray. I pray before I'm going. And if I'm sitting at an event and I am uncomfortable at that event, my eyes start going around the table and I say a quiet, silent prayer for each person sitting there. Just ask God, right? And I pray and meditate on who I can help. Who can I be helpful to? And more about alcoholism on page 30, it says no person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. So why would I share this? Well, I must know that I am bodily and mentally different from my family and other people that I might be sharing the holidays with. I have to know that. The thought, by the way, the thought that I'm possibly missing out on something I once enjoyed is delusional thinking. It's not true. Not all that enjoyable, actually. It really wasn't all that enjoyable, actually, when I was eating. Remember, there was a glass wall between me and all those people there while I was eating all that food. It wasn't really enjoying them. You know, the extra bite that leads to the binge guarantees that I will always emerge remorseful. That's what happens for me. It is not fun, right? I've never woken up the day after a binge and said, oh, now that was excellent. That was excellent and so satisfying. I got it out of my system and now I'm ready to do business. Instead, I wake up crushed and defeated. But the problem is, I can talk to you about this right now, right here and now, and yet I have no mental defense. This is all mental defense because I don't have a strong enough memory, and throwing information and data at it doesn't do much help. I have a spiritual malady, and it shows up as a form of insanity. It's a form of insanity. That's how it manifests itself. And it can only be treated with abstinence and spiritual awakening. Spiritual awakening is the only thing that treats this. And the reason I say that it's a form of insanity is, if we look at page 36, 37, Jim talks about putting whiskey in his milk. And he says, he had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. Right? That's called insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? So I'm told here what this insanity looks like. It's a lack of proportion and the inability to think straight. So if I lack proportion, it means that I make things that are less important, crucially important, and things that are crucially important, I minimize. And that's what it means if I show up to a holiday event and I say, oh, I don't want to ask her what she put in that because I don't want to insult my hostess. Or I don't want to embarrass somebody. I don't want to embarrass myself. I don't want to, right? That's lacking proportion, because if I know something has the capacity to be deadly for me, then I'm saying that it's more important how I look to those other people than my very life. That makes no sense. That's insanity, right? And I have an inability to think straight, because in the moment, that sounds perfectly reasonable. In the moment, right? And if you're not sure about whether you lack proportion, I would say this is really helpful for moms and dads and parents. If your child had a deadly peanut allergy and you knew something would kill them if they ate it, right? You would never just wing it with that child. I mean, I've taught for a number of years, and I know which kids in my class have a peanut allergy, and their parents make sure that you know it. Why? Because they have the ability to think straight, because they don't lack proportion in that area. But I don't have that ability for myself. Not where this disease is concerned. And I can have all the information in the world about what this allergy is, but I lack proportion. In the chapter, Working with Others, page 100 to 101, now we're going to talk about, assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served, We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars, or our friends have to hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Okay, can you imagine if we had to do that with food? Where would we go? It's impossible. And our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There's something the matter with his spiritual status. So if that's you, what it means is that you've got to work on your spiritual status first, right? Spiritual status first. And further down the page, on the third paragraph, it says, so our rule is not to avoid a place where there is drinking if we have a legitimate reason for being there. So what's the reasons we can go? Well, the fourth paragraph says it. An important qualification, therefore, ask yourself on each occasion, have I any good social, business, or personal reasons for going to this place? Am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such places? If you answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. Go or stay away, whichever seems best. But be sure you are on solid spiritual ground before you start and that your motive in going is thoroughly good. So it's important to understand why am I going to an event? What's my reason for being there? If it's to be with my family in celebration, or if it's a work Christmas party and it's part of my job, or if it's a new romantic relationship and I'm meeting the family, right? I go to all kinds of gatherings, but I'm not going. For me, I'm not going to go before my family and the people I love and make a suggestion, hey, let's go out to a buffet, right? I don't make suggestions to go to food-centered activities just so I can watch others indulge. That's vicarious pleasure. But I also need to know that if I'm spiritually fit enough to go, solid spiritual ground, okay? Do not think of what you're going to get out of the occasion. Think of what you can bring to it. But if you are shaky, you had better work with another alcoholic instead. And I love how our solution, by the way, our solution is always the same. Whenever we're uncomfortable in this program of recovery, whenever we're shaky, whenever we're having a trouble, our directions are so consistent. It's the same direction. Go help someone else. Work with another person. Go help another person. If you're having any problem at all, our remedy is always to help others. Think of others because selfishness is the root of our problem. So we want to solve it. It means we have to be less selfish. We have to be more considerate and think of other people. Then it goes on to say, why sit with a long face in places where there is drinking? Sighing about the good old days. By the way, I laugh when I say that because I look at the pictures of me on those good old days. That's delusional thinking. They weren't so good. By the way, if your good old days were so good, like I'm happy you're here, but what are you doing here, right? If they were so good, we wouldn't be here wondering how are we going to get through these holidays. If it's a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. We want to make people happier and happier occasions. We want to bring happiness there. If there's a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. Do your job, do it with a smile, do it with like pep in your step, right? If you're showing up to something work-related, if it's a work-related function, don't sit there pouting. If you're with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along, right? If you're on solid spiritual ground, let your friends know they are not to change their habits on your account. Okay, don't sit there pouting. No pouting. There's no point in going if you're going to pout. Not thoughtful to your guests, and it's not thoughtful to your hosts, and it's not serving to others. And I think about those times I used to show up to events, abstinent, angry, and pouting, mad, right? So I'm supposed to increase the fun for other people. Besides, my goal, our goal, is to carry the message, and my demeanor speaks louder than my words. So the way that I show up, the way that I act, tells the message much louder than anything that I say to the people that I'm speaking to. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you, right? Why you can't just eat what you want to eat, you know, whatever everybody else is eating, or in ways that everyone else is eating. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. So yes, we're told, tell others that you have a food addiction. Yeah, it's not a big dark secret. You never know if there may be someone suffering there too, right? Maybe the person you're speaking to suffers and you don't even know about it. Or they might know someone. You don't know who they know. I can't carry the message if my message is a secret. If nobody knows what it is I have, how am I helping anybody? And remember, this isn't a morality issue, so there shouldn't be any shame involved. I have a disease. I've got to get rid of those feelings of shame. Otherwise, I can't help people. You know, in the chapter, The Family Afterward, it speaks about that. Page 124, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. So I have a responsibility to be honest, especially since I can help save someone from death and misery, right? If you can help save people from death and misery, and you're sitting next to somebody and they ask you, like, what's the deal with you and your eating? Well, you shouldn't be keeping it a secret because you could be saving someone's life. And I've benefited from someone who told someone about Overeaters Anonymous, and that person told me about it. That's how I found out about it for the first time. So you never know who's going to get to hear what it is you have and what the solution is. Okay, now let's go back to the chapter Working with Others on page 102. Because it says, now our job's to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life and with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. So, I was talking about this topic with Janet earlier, and she reminded me to speak about the time that I went to a wedding in Texas, because this is exactly what worked for me. So I'm going to tell you guys about this. My nephew was getting married. It was in Texas, and my nephew and his wife, now they have two kids, but they were like new, getting married, young couple. They're vegetarians, and they were making a vegetarian wedding, and there was nothing for me to eat really at this wedding because it was just a pasta extravaganza. And I knew that going in. And I wasn't gonna, it was not kind, and it wasn't their responsibility to provide food for me. This is a young couple. It was my responsibility, right? So I made sure that I had what I needed to eat, and I prayed and meditated before I went. And I knew it was gonna be kind of tricky, like figuring out the food. I basically ate. I had a little can of salmon. I ate my can of salmon walking from the hotel to the venue, and a bag of veggies, and I prayed like I always do before I go to these events, like, God, please help me find the person that I'm supposed to be helpful to. That's my mission. Like, I don't go to any place anymore just for me. I try to look for the person I'm supposed to help. And when I got to this wedding, I was online. I went to get a drink. I went to get a club soda. And I said to the bartender, put lots of lemon in it. Make it look like a real drink. I go, make it look like a real drink. And standing beside me on this bar line was this young guy, early 20s. And it turns out he's the first cousin of my nephew's. I hadn't seen this kid since he was a toddler. He's on the other side. And he looked at me and he said, you don't drink? He said, you're not drinking? And I said, no. I said, yeah, that ship sailed. I don't drink. And he whispered to me, he goes, this is my first sober affair. This is my first sober event. I just got out of rehab. How do you do these things sober? And it was like, I couldn't believe, like, here I was with this kid who I desperately was supposed to be helpful to. And I told him, I said, you know how I do these things sober? I pray before I go. And I ask God to show me who I'm supposed to help, who I'm supposed to be useful for tonight. And tonight, that's you. I guess that's you tonight. And, that's how we do this thing. I couldn't care less about food that night. I found a fellow. We spent some time talking. I offered him fellowship, friendship, support. And the food was quiet, So when you go to your family events, think about the people that you're there to be of use to. I have this willingness list I bring with me, right? It's in my, I would bring it in my pocket in early recovery. It's all the things I'm willing to do when the food calls my name. Prayer, meditate, help others, right? Lots of other things on there. Okay. Bring my food with me, bring my backup food with me. I remain close to my program. I make my calls. I pray and meditate in the morning. I reach out to newcomers, those struggling, those newly abstinent. I look to be helpful. When I go to family events, I play with the little kids. When my nieces and nephews want to sit at the dinner table and hang out and just sit and chat and eat leisurely, I get up. I go play with their kids. I let them sit. I bring a plate to an old relative. I sit next to someone that everyone else is annoyed by, right? I find the most socially awkward person in the room and I let them talk at length to me about whatever issue they want to discuss, and I get interested in whatever their topic is. I force myself to get interested in their topic. Help older relatives. The answer, really, if you want to remain abstinent throughout the holidays, is to think of others, to strengthen your relationship with God. And if my mind starts drifting onto the plates of food, I thank God that I have enough and that I'm safe and I'm surrounded with people that I love. And I'll think of like each of you, right? I keep my phone on. Keep it on. If possible, I can answer it. I answer texts when I'm able to. We reach out to one another. So if you want to remain abstinent through the holidays, there's meetings, there's fellowship, there's support, and there's our relationship with God. And with that, I'll pass.